Hello, good morning, everyone. That was a beautiful song. I was thinking, feeling, when you were doing the song, I was feeling that is your offering. And I could feel you both just being so into that and giving it to everyone. And so I got to receive that too, and I hope you did. It's what's so beautiful about that gift of music. It does things that sometimes the spoken word can't do. So let me speak for about 20 minutes or so. Thank you so much for that. It's very beautiful. That song you just heard will never, ever be performed that way again. That was a once-in-a-lifetime thing that we just witnessed. And so it is with all of our lives, and here we are now. Last week, we may have had a glitchy recording, and we're not sure why that happened. We were talking this morning about that. We don't know if it was in the broadcast or if it's just in the recording, but the universe is doing strange things. And so we professionally analyzed the situation and said, I don't know.
The universe is glitchy right now.
Yeah, the universe is glitchy right now, Cindy says, and I believe that that's true. So hopefully this broadcast is reaching you in a cohesive way, and you're able to benefit from it. Another thing I wanted to address just before we get into meditation is that on Thursday, August 6th, it was Myrtle Fillmore's birthday, our co-founder. And so we send out a happy birthday to her. And also, you know, there's many of you in our congregation who have birthdays all over the place. There's a lot of August birthdays. And so just a happy birthday to everyone who's having birthdays in August. And we like to recognize that in our founders, their birthdays. And interestingly, I learned Charles Fillmore passed on August 5th. He was not going to have one more birthday without his wife. He said, nope, I'm out of here. So interesting month of August. And one thing that is a sort of a planetary alignment that brings great, powerful energy into the earth plane is the Lion's Gate, which happens in August. And yesterday, the Lion's Gate portal was the most open. It's a process of about a week or so. So if you've been feeling these crazy, glitchy, weird energies, there's actually a planetary alignment, which is what the pyramids in Egypt were built underneath that alignment, Orion's Belt and the star Sirius. So that just passed yesterday. And I don't know about you guys, but I have been feeling a lot of very intense energy. And today, I woke up and it was just different, much lighter, and it kind of felt like, ah, okay, let's get busy. So I don't know if any of that makes sense to you, but however it is, nothing is more powerful than practicing the presence of the eternal spirit of life. So would you join me? First, please take a deep breath in and fill your lungs with cleansing life. Let it grab up as you hold the breath at the top, whatever it is that you want to release, and let it go. Two more, nice big inhale. And as you hold your breath, imagine it grabbing up all that stuff and then release it. One more time, this one's for you. Hold and release. Let your eyes come gently closed if they're not already. And then notice the condition of your physical being, especially around your shoulders and your hips. Begin to release the tension. Yet at the same time, lifting tall through the crown, as if being rooted into the earth and reaching your antenna deep into the heavens, somewhere between heaven and earth, we have our existence, human and divine. And from this place, get with your breath. Deeply notice it. If you can, feel the vibration of your breath as it enters into your body and fills it. And as it exits of its own accord, this is noticing the great cosmic motor, the Om vibration, and what gives life to the world, all in your breath right now. Bring your awareness into the lowermost part of your spine at the small of the back there. And notice the energy draw it up into the heart center. And then from the heart center to the spiritual eye, at the point between the eyebrows, bring a keen focus to your eternal life. And now from here back into your physical body, feel that divine life flood into your being, into your cells, into your bones, into your muscles, and into your breath. We claim right here and now that we are infused with divine life, and that we are made whole and pure in God's perfect image. As children of God, we do not inherit sickness, but our true nature is whole and complete, divine, pure light. So we take a couple of breaths in that spirit, life breathing life. And then from here, we open the eyes easily, infused with that divine life, with the conviction that we are eternal beings. Isn't that beautiful? All right, so come back if you're not already back. And of course, you can always stay in meditation as long as you wish, even the whole time if you like. So today, if I'm honest, I really don't know what I'm doing, but I have some things I'd like to share, talk about. Isn't that how it always is? Even though we think we know what we're doing, we don't really know what we're doing. Have you ever felt like you've been here before? Like right here, right now? And I'm not just talking deja vu. Have you ever felt like you've been in a different lifetime? Have you seen another lifetime of yours? Something that you've done, big or small, great or tiny? Have you intuited the life that flows through you is not isolated to this one body, to this one incarnation? Excuse me. Well, I certainly have. And it's a lot of a lot that goes with that. And so what I'd like to ask today is a few questions. One is, what is my body for? What is this thing for? In many of the spiritual teachings, Course in Miracles, we talk a lot about, I am not a body, I am free, for I am still as God created me. In the yogic teachings, same thing, always transcending the physical body to reach for something. So what is this body for? Why am I in it? Certainly Charles and Myrtle Fillmore had a deep and intimate relationship with this question, this divine inquiry. But am I not much more than my body? Am I not a soul? And if I am, then what is my soul for? What am I doing? And why would I be here? Just a little tiny question. What is my body for? What is my soul for? Wow, if those aren't enough questions, how do I find my true nature? How do I make sense of it all? I'm just so glad that I've already set up in the last few weeks that I don't come with answers, but I certainly come with contemplations. And as some teacher along the way taught me, contemplation is the greatest form of prayer, the highest form, just contemplating what that could be, what that could mean. Because let's face it, and I know as light workers and truth seekers, we go out into the world with these questions, and doesn't the world reveal the answers? And sometimes, and most oftentimes, they're not answers that can be articulated with words. I think Charles Fillmore said, words are poor and bare when they seek to explain the nature of spirit and of God. So maybe I can tell a story. It's a story that I love. It's actually a very long story, so I'll tell only a part of it. But it's about a king and a student, a guru and a seeker, a chela. And the king's name is Janaka, and the seeker is named Shukadeva. And Shukadeva had been born into a family of great opportunity. He could do what he wanted, and he wanted to seek God. That's all he wanted to do, and he was a young man. And so he'd heard about this king, and he was sent to find King Janaka, and he was expecting to find a guru seated in the lotus position, eating no food and, you know, no material possessions. And instead he finds the king seated on a throne, being fanned by his concubines, I think they call them, people who take care of him, being fed grapes, big belly, lots of opulence everywhere. This castle's rich with gold and silver and trinkets and all the material wealth you could imagine. And Shukadeva says, "Pfft." You ever said that? "This king is no guru. He's a matter-soaked buffoon." So he goes to run off, you know, and he goes and walks away with all his books that he had brought. And the king came running out to him, and he said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I came to find a teacher." And he goes, "And you think I'm not a teacher?" He said, "It doesn't look like it to me." He said, "Come, we'll talk about God." And Shukadeva said, "I guess." So he goes and he sits with the king. And the king sends away all the people that had surrounded him, and he starts into a great discourse about God. And he's telling Shukadeva everything there is to know about God. And each time Shukadeva would want to interject his profound wisdom, he would be shut down by the king. And suddenly, as it's going on and on, one of the subjects runs in and he says, "King Janaka," he said, the palace is on fire. And he says, "I can't be bothered with that right now. I'm in a conversation with my friend about God." And he says, "Okay," he says, "go deal with it." So he runs off. And he's continuing to talk with Shukadeva about God. And after a little while, he comes running back in. He says, "King, King, you've got to leave." He said, "It's at your door." And he said, "I cannot be bothered with this. I am speaking with my friend about God." And the subject is like, "Okay." And he runs outside. And pretty soon, the flames are engulfing the building, and they're very close to where Janaka and Shukadeva are talking. And Shukadeva starts to look like this. And the king is just rambling on about God. And Shuka Deva starts to get very nervous, and he starts to collect his books. And the king laughs and waves his hand, and the fire disappears. And Shuka Deva looks at the king, and he says, "Here you are, thinking that you are some God-realized person, and you're more worried about your books than you are about God." And Shuka Deva says, "You are my teacher. Teach me." And the king says, "Okay." And now the palace has suddenly and miraculously gone back to normal. No fire, no damage. And so he calls in his people to help young Shuka Deva hold two oil lanterns in his hands. And he puts them in his hands and he fills them with oil and they light the candle. And he says to Shuka Deva, "I want you to go into my palace and notice everything and not spill a drop of oil." And Shuka Deva says, "Okay." And so he goes through the whole palace, and as he's going, the helpers are putting oil back in so it's nice and full. And so he goes through and he comes back to the king and he says, "Okay, I didn't spill a drop." And the king says, "Good. What was in my palace?" He said, "I don't know. I was concentrating on the oil." And he said, "You are not learning. Try again. And this time, tell me what's in the castle." So Shuka Deva has a little more confidence now, and he takes the oil lamps, they fill them, and he walks through the palace for many, many hours. And he has a new sort of a strength. And he's keeping his eye on the flame very keenly. And as he comes back to the king, he says, "I did not spill a drop. Tell me about what's in my palace." And Shuka Deva proceeds to tell him every detail about what's in every room. And King Janaka says, "Now you are ready." The first lesson is, don't be fooled by appearances. The second lesson is about catastrophe, the fire. It is not what it appears to be either. And the third lesson is, keep your eye on God, but notice everything. We want to notice what's in our world, our personal world, but we want to know that behind it, through it, around it, is the presence of God, the candles, the flame. What a thing it is. And so in unity, we have this symbol here that you can see on the podium, the wings. And this is an ancient Egyptian symbol, but it's also the symbol of many religions. And what it represents is the body, the round disc, the soul that is the wings, and the enveloping principle, which is all around us, of spirit. So the soul gives wings to the body, and spirit gives wings to the soul and the body in that very same way. So what is my body for? Well, for me and where I'm at in my world, my spiritual journey or inquiry, is how can I use my body to best serve my soul? And how can I use my soul to best serve God? And that's not something I have an answer that I can just tell you real quick what that is. But when we think about that, what is it for you? What comes up for you? Does the story that I told you, does these things seem too airy-fairy, too unrealistic? Because there's a fire, and it's destroying things. But there's something beyond that. And when, with one wave of the hand, the guru, the true spiritual teacher, can make that fire disappear. And I don't know how that works, but it works pretty well. So it's funny to tell that story to you today because I brought a pile of books. And you guys know how I love my books. But I don't guzzle these things. I just take them in short little doses. And so today, Charles Fillmore wanted to share something with you. That's how I see it. And he wrote many books. One is Mysteries of John. And in the very introduction, I'm not going to get into the book of John, but it's the most mystical of all the Gospels. And he goes through and talks about the verses and what they mean metaphysically. And he says this interesting thing that's valuable for us in our world today that relates to this. He said, we're all heavily charged with ideas. Isn't that true? And when these ideas are released, they spring forth and pass from mind to mind, being recorded as they fly. And when they are expressed, the whole race is lifted up if the idea is charged with the uplifting spirit. And if it is not, then there's just a panic about the fire. If life is not something to be feared, what is it beyond the fire that I'm not seeing? What is it beyond the lanterns that I'm not looking for? What is it beyond my assessment of who I think I am? That I think that I can be destroyed? Or that I think that I'm not going to be taken care of? What is it that I'm actually focused on? These are huge questions. So I have to employ another one of my favorite teachers, Paramahansa Yogananda. This book was a gift from Nan, actually, a friend of Everett Unity for a long time and who recently passed away. And so I got this book from her. It's been a profound gift. And it's the same thing, little paragraphs that you can read. It's called Man's Eternal Quest. And the reason that I want to share it with you is because it's exactly what Charles Fillmore says. And I like this about Yogananda. He's a very practical teacher. He says, when you came into this world, you cried, whereas everybody else rejoiced. During your lifetime, work and serve in such a way that when it is time for you to leave this world, you will smile at parting, and the world cries for you. Hold this thought, and you will always remember to consider others before yourself. This vast world was made that you might use your intelligence to acquire knowledge of the spirit, knowledge about yourself. Just one thought may redeem you. Just one thought. That's how powerful what we think is. You don't realize how effectively your thoughts work in the ether. So there it is again. So putting all this together, what if my life, my world, your life, your world, your body, my body, our souls, what if they were intimately intertwined? And we at Unity hear that and say, well, duh, of course they're intimately intertwined. We're all one. And to say that we're all one and to intellectually believe it has a certain amount of power. But to feel it and to know it through practicing the presence of God is an entirely different thing. The way that Charles Fillmore taught and Paramahansa Yogananda taught and most mystics teach is that universal divine energy, the very energy of life itself, comes down into our soul and then down into our being. That our soul is individualized spirit, and then our bodies are little individualized souls. Charles Fillmore calls that generation, degeneration, and then regeneration. That the energy that comes down and it starts to pull us into the earth, down into the elemental nature of being, it's wonderful. And at some point, it gets too heavy to bear. So we begin to lift it back up. And that's why we're always working to lift ourselves back up into spirit. And that's what this whole thing is about. It's so compelling to me. And it makes, I don't know if you can get with me on this illustration, but I've been seeing this a lot in my imagination of things that once seemed so gigantic, and I try to put my little tiny self in that big giant thing. And then as I contemplate more about the divine nature of life, all of a sudden that thing becomes very tiny, and I'm trying to pack my big giant soul into this little tiny thing. And I won't be a caged monkey. I keep realizing that, but that's not just about me. I see that in other people too. People are saying, no, I'm going to change my life now, because we're starting to realize our divine nature. We're starting to realize that we can, like King Janaka, wave our hand and the fire disappears through how we think about the world. But it's more than just thinking. It's about feeling. It is this relationship that we have with the divine, where we get to lay hold of that divine life, and through the thought, feeling nature of our being, we project our world into being. That's hardcore stuff if we're not ready to take responsibility at that level. So sometimes we need to take it in sips. We need to take it in little doses. We need to practice. Yogananda says this thing, it's in this book also. He talks about the three stages of cosmic consciousness. Now, when you and I were in the meditation, we were in a Christ consciousness meditation, where we come to the Christ consciousness center and we begin to perceive our oneness. Cosmic consciousness perceives the entire universe. And that might sound complicated, and that's why I love Yogananda. He simplifies it for me. And he says there's three phases of this cosmic consciousness. The first is we begin to be serviceful to the world. We begin to improve our thought-feeling nature. We do not allow ourselves the luxury of stinking thinking. We begin to think like God would think. We begin to treat ourselves as God would treat us. Which is what? When you think about it, what is that? Pure divine love. So the first phase is this serving the world, because you cannot serve the world and not serve yourself. But you can certainly serve yourself and not serve the world. And the more that we do that, the more that we shove ourselves into the little tiny container. And then the second phase is non-attachment. We begin to let go of the things that we've been so attached to. And that's not easy. So we must do it in a way that is, well, I don't know if we must, but for me, it's a must. I must let go of my attachment to what I think I need to be okay, and let go of my attachment to the fruits of my work. I will do that for you as long as you give me this. And instead begin to say, I will do that because that is what is mine to do, and trust that I'll be taken care of. And the way that we are taken care of, we've proved to ourselves time and again, blows away the stuff that my separated, isolated self can bring into being. And then the third phase of cosmic consciousness is just simply communion. It's meditation, it's contemplation, it's being with God in the innermost chamber. And when we put those three things together, what a world we get to live in. But when we're fighting, it's why in the little blurb on the Facebook I put there, even beyond forgiveness. As long as we think that somebody is doing something wrong or bad and I have to forgive that person for what they're doing, they got me. I'm stuck. So I move beyond forgiveness and I just keep my eyes on the candles. I keep my eyes on the presence of God all the time. When we were, excuse me today, two times this happened to me in the last 2 weeks. We were in Montana. You guys know we were on a vacation there. And we were at this raging river. And we were both meditating at this river for a long time. And as I think I was sitting on a big giant stone in the river, and my eyes were beholding this gorgeous sight. There's water coming up and down, and the river was meeting. It was this gorgeous spot. And my eyes could see and my ears could hear. And I closed my eyes and everything changed. I took away that sensory input. And my ears, my outer ears shut, and I could feel the power of that river as if it were flowing in the center of the earth. It was rumbling. It was alive in a place that was much deeper, much more primordial than what my eyes and outer ears told me it was. And I started to realize that's Om, the sacred sound of Om that brings into life all things. It was talking to me. It was a profound experience. And then I opened my eyes, and it was almost like a painting, what I saw now. And I could feel God. And then again yesterday, Jenny and I went walking in Edmonds down all the way to this creek that's down kind of by the ferry dock. And there's this gorgeous creaky river thing that's just beautiful. And we stood on this log that had fallen over it, and we put our hands together, and we made an intention for our life. We love doing this. And we both closed our eyes, balancing on a log, and it happened again. As she spoke a prayer, I could feel the same thing. What a beautiful experience it is. And so we've been, well, at least I know she does too, but I'll speak for me. I've been practicing this thing where I look at a room, I look at people, I look at a situation and say, hold on a minute. Let me feel into this. And the candles come into view, the candles of God. And I see everything in the castle, yet I'm focused on the God that's underneath it, that gives rise to it. And I'm not saying I can do that all the time, but when I can, I feel like I've learned what my body is for. I feel like I've learned what my soul wants to do. And then that last part of it, I can just be with God, no matter where I am and no matter what's happening. It doesn't mean that I don't want to serve in the world and help what's happening, that I don't want to fight the fire. But what happens when I do? Do I lose myself? And that's the beautiful part where I say, I don't know. In the end of Yogananda's beautiful book, Autobiography of a Yogi, a student asks a question, why would God bring this world into being if it was wrought with trouble? And Yogananda's guru, Sri Yukteswar, says, leave some things to play with in eternity. Because your soul and my soul, in my estimation, is eternal. We are eternal beings of light and love. And if you were listening to this, you didn't come here by accident. You're probably a light worker. You're probably one who wants to work in the world to take the hand and lift up the people, to purify your thought nature, to serve the world rather than condemn it. What a beautiful thing that is. What did Jesus say? I love this. If I be lifted up, will bring all men to myself. That doesn't mean Jesus, the man. It means the Christ consciousness within us, within you, within me. If I be lifted up, everything comes with me. In other words, I see the world whole and complete. What a thing. All you who are heavy laden, bring me your troubles and I will help you. I will take your burdens. What a beautiful thing. But who really believes that? When I intellectually believe that, it doesn't serve me. But when I know it, I feel it, then we can work with that in the process of soul evolution. Just a light talk today, I guess, huh? What a thing. Well, anyway, I'm going to stop rambling now. I hope that you found something today that you can use. You know, we like to always say, take what you want and leave the rest. And in that spirit of divine life, be free. Thank you.